Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, welcome to our program, Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. I'm your host, Roy Richards. On the program today, we're going to talk about guiding and disciplining of your children as they progress from small children into teens and what we call tweens, which are like 11 and 12-year-olds who are just growing out of their small child years and growing up to be teenagers. And I'd like to kick off the program with a classic example of how not to discipline your children and how not to guide them as teenagers. This is the story of a scoutmaster that I will call Scoutmaster Doozy. Now, that's not his real name, although surprisingly, his name wasn't too different from that. Now, Scoutmaster Doozy happened to have a son who was in scouts and school with me named Jim Doozy, and Jim had a real irritating habit that he couldn't help. He did excessive blinking. He'd stand there, and his eyes would just blink and blink and blink, and it really would distract you. At times it was worse, at times it was better, and Jim Doozy did not wear contacts. There were early contacts back then, but he didn't have them. It was just a nervous habit that he just couldn't get over, and it sometimes got worse. It seemed to get worse whenever his father was around. Anyway, one night at a scout meeting, his father, who was the scoutmaster, he was a big bear of a man, probably used to be a sergeant in the Army, I don't know, he looked like that type, and he walked over to where his son was standing with a number of other scouts, and he said, "Jim Doozy, stop that excessive blinking." And of course, his son then started blinking all the more and sort of slinked away embarrassed in front of all his friends. And, I don't need to tell you this, but obviously, as we mentioned in our book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, in the section we talk about disciplining and guiding your teenagers, this Scoutmaster Doozy had violated two firm parental rules. First of all, you never discipline your teenager or your tween in front of comrades. You always do it in private. And because the last thing you want to do is tear down your son or daughter's self-esteem among his peers. The second thing, obviously, that Scoutmaster Doozy did all wrong, you don't rebuke a child for something that he can't help. And obviously, Jim Doozy could not help the fact that he excessively blinked. And obviously, it just became worse as his father pounded on him about it. And I don't know what happened to Jim Doozy as an adult, but I wonder if you would meet him today if he still blinks a lot. It's hard to say, but his father certainly put roadblocks in the way of a successful growing up and a happy teenage years. The second story I'd like to tell involves that same man, the Scoutmaster Doozy. Only a couple months earlier, I'd crossed over the bridge, as they call it, and went from Cub Scouts into Boy Scouts, and I had loved Cub Scouts. I really relished the meetings. I liked the scout moms, and it was just really fun. I wasn't so sure I liked Boy Scouts because it was a little too much like the Army to my taste, but, I was trying it out, and I thought it'd probably be okay. But long about that, it was summer months, and the scouts went on a weekend camp out that I was told by my parents to go along and earn some merit, stored a badge or whatever, and we camped out in the farm field where obviously the farmer had given permission. It was a nice area down by the river with a lot of trees, but unfortunately the previous inhabitants of that area had been a bunch of cattle and there were cow pies all over the place, so you had to be very careful when you set up your tent or stepped anywhere that you didn't step in a big old cow pie. Anyway, I was very thirsty, and we were all given a canteen for the weekend and filled it up, and as I filled mine up, out came a bunch of beetles. Obviously, the canteen hadn't been used in some time, and a mama beetle had set up a nest in there. So obviously, I was not real. I vowed I would not drink any more out of that canteen the rest of the weekend. But on Saturday, we went on this, almost like a forced march in the Army. It was like a five-mile hike where we jogged and did all this stuff, supposedly earning points at some merit badge or something. And when it was summertime, it was probably in the 80s or low 90s. And obviously, by the time I was done, I was pretty thirsty, but I wasn't about to go use that canteen with the Beatles had been in it. So I walked over to this big cloth water basket or whatever they call it that was hanging in the campgrounds, and it had a little faucet under it, and I put my mouth down under the faucet, and I drank some water because I was very thirsty. Lo and behold, who should come running over but Scoutmaster Doozy, who shouted at me right in front of the other scouts who were around, "You do not drink out of the directly out of that water basket. You put it in your canteen, and you are exposing all the other scouts to your germs," and he, reamed me up and down. And, well, guess what? I decided that was the last scouting event I was ever going to go to, and I was so relieved when my parents showed up that Sunday morning to pick me up, and I told them right there on the spot, "I'm through with Boy Scouts. It's not my cup of tea," and I never went back to another meeting. Now, I know, the reason I'm mentioning this is I'm just telling you that there are definitely wrong ways to parent through those very sensitive years when you're going through puberty. Your son and daughter is changing from a small child into a responsible, hopefully responsible teenager, and that's certainly not the way that you lead them. And I'm not trying to knock Boy Scouts. I think it's a wonderful organization. I'm sure Scoutmaster Doozy has long since passed on to his reward, and I'm sure he didn't mean anything by it. He just was not the person that should have been in charge of the scouting troop, and quite frankly, it's kind of too bad he'd ever had a child because he was not the ideal father either. But now we're going to proceed to the program where we're going to talk to two experts who are going to tell you the right way that you should parent and transition your parenting as your children themselves grow from small children into teenagers. Now let's get on with the program. Well, when it comes to relationships, for those of us at middle age, most would agree that one of the toughest and most complicated is with our teenage sons and daughters. Our offspring's transition from young child to teen is difficult for them, and it's one of our biggest midlife challenges as well. It's kind of like our pet Springer Spaniel, Chips. When Chips was a cuddly young puppy, I would pick him up and swing him in my arms. But one day when he was about 1 year old, which is teenage for a dog, I tried to pick him up and he growled and snarled and tried to bite my hand. Unfortunately, many of our teenagers behave like Chips, although I trust, unlike our dog, they don't try to bite you. But do you recognize this conversation? Say you walk downstairs one morning and notice your teenage daughter is in the kitchen. You greet her with a warm good morning, and she gives you her customary grunt and turns her back. You ask her how her schoolwork is going, and she replies, "Okay." And you ask if she has any interesting activities planned for this weekend, and she replies, "Nothing." And you ask how she spent last evening with her new boyfriend, Jason, and she replies, "We just went out. Why do you and Dad or Mom, whoever it may be, always prying into my business? I know you don't like Jason. Just back off, okay?" And with that, she picks up her iPhone and stomps out of the room. Our sons and daughters who at 9 and 10 are so proud to share their accomplishments with Mom and Dad and come to us with their problems seemingly overnight as teenagers want to shut us out. And as our guest today astutely describes it, they eat, they sleep, they text, and occasionally they have a conversation with you, and usually when they want money or keys to the car is when they come to you. But they become, like she says, mysterious strangers who come in and out of your house. And our guest is here to talk about the conversation every parent should have with their teens. And Nordica Francis is a veteran educator and a counselor with 30 years of experience counseling teens. And she's got a master's in educational administration and supervision. And she's a learning consultant for one of New Jersey's largest school districts. And she's author of a book written specifically for your teenage daughters called Rockstar Teenage Girl, Self and Confidence Building for Tween and Teenage Girls. Hello, Nordica, and welcome to our program.
Good morning, Roy. Thanks for having me.
This is probably a dumb question, but just to start out, tell me what a tween is. I think I know.
Oh, a tween is the child in that age group of 10 to 12.
Okay, 10 to 12.
They're out of their single-digit years, and they're not quite teenagers. They're not 13, so they're tweens.
That's what I thought it was, but I just wanted to make sure I understood.
Yes. Kind of a new term that popped up in the last several years.
Yeah, and they seem to get younger and younger when they're on their iPhones and their video games and all this other stuff. They grow up too fast, I think
they all sure do.
Well, the advent of the Internet and now 24/7 social media has radically altered the landscape from when we were teens. And the million-dollar question is, what can parents in their 40s and 50s do to decipher what's going on in their teenagers' everyday life? What's the key to discovering what they're thinking and how they feel about different experiences and what's really happening in their world?
Well, it might sound like a very simple answer, but there's a lot to it. Parents have to talk to their teens, and I know based on the information you just gave before and the example of Chip and all that, it's not the easiest thing to do. But maybe we can start by establishing a pattern with our teenagers of talking to them and conversing with them about everyday topics. These conversations don't have to be long and they don't have to be formal, but kids would get to the point of understanding or knowing that a conversation is not an unusual thing.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be a threatening thing either. I mean,
no, it does not. And you know, they would come to you then with very simple matters or very complex matters because they're used to talking to you. And there are a lot of ways of starting to have these conversations and to have them over an extended period. You can watch a TV show that your teen is watching. Discuss it, get an opinion. That might take 2 seconds, 2 minutes.
Yeah. That mean I have to listen to Justin Bieber?
You probably do, because he is out there and he has a big girl following, and you know, you want to know what he's thinking and what his music is like and how much his music is influencing them.
I've never heard a Justin Bieber record, but then again, my kids are grown, so I don't have to.
Maybe you could take a listen to a Justin Bieber record.
Don't mean to knock you, Justin, if you're listening.
he can handle it, I'm sure. So you do that kind of thing, watch TV with them, see what they're watching. You can share a news story, especially a big news story like a major shooting or a group of teens getting arrested for something silly. And you get their opinion on these things. Are they brushing it off? You know, they're totally desensitized, or do they think it's a big deal? They might want to talk about that.
And
you might share your opinion, and then they'll share theirs.
And it's great when you start treating them as equals, as partners, in effect, getting their opinion rather than talking down to them as a small child. I know that's
absolutely, and this is where middle-aged parents might be at a good time, because now they're not basically just caregivers, and they're not worried about the physical needs of their kids in terms of getting them bathed and ready for school and that kind of thing, and they can establish a really good rapport with kids and get opinions and share feelings about certain things, share selectively. If you share with kids, they'll share with you. You're not going to come home and start talking about fighting with your spouse over money, but you might share that you had a rough day at work or that you had to do a presentation. At first, you were very nervous, but it came out well in the end, or you had to approach your boss about a problem you were having. And if you constantly share with them, it opens up a line of communication.
Yeah, if you share your personal difficulties and experiences with the teenager, I'm sure they'd be more open to sharing with you. So that really would be the best way to get teens to start asking for your advice on subjects when they have a problem. That you know, obviously,
absolutely,
you don't want to find out that they were bullied at school when they try to commit suicide or something.
No.
I mean, that's a horrible example, but that's the kind of thing you need to know in advance.
You need to know ahead of time, certainly. Certainly,
and yet, if you come right out and say, "Are you being bullied at school?" You know, they probably aren't.
Yeah, that's probably not the best approach, but you might talk about bullying in general. You might share a story you've heard or read in the news, because we have a lot of these stories now on television of children getting bullied, of children committing suicide because of bullying. So you want to establish a line of communication, and you want them to know that you're an ally and they could come to you and talk about problems and share. One way to do that is to not criticize them, even when you have to criticize one of their behaviors.
Yeah, that's so crucial.
You would criticize the behavior, but not the child. And so they establish some kind of trust in you. They know that you're on their side. Children in their teenage years are really looking for allies as they try to establish who they are or who they're going to be as individual adults.
Yeah.
So they really need the help of a parent in that line, along those lines.
Yeah, that's one of, when you talk about establishing allies, that's one of the biggest challenges my wife and I had when our children were teenagers, is the child comes to you as an ally against the other parent.
Yeah, that has to be something that parents talk about in advance and get on the same page, as we say.
Yeah.
So that the child is not able to do that kind of thing.
And that,
because they will try that kind of thing.
A lot of tension in the marriage, too.
Yes, they will try that, to set one against the other.
I can remember one time when I was stuck in the middle, my wife was having this, what I thought was a very silly argument with our son, because he was dressed the way she didn't particularly appreciate, and we were going to go out to breakfast together, and she said, "I won't be caught dead in a restaurant with you dressed like that." And he, of course, became very upset and refused to change, and so we ended up not going out to breakfast that day. But, you know, it's difficult when I was in the middle, and I didn't know what to do, because I loved them both, and frankly, I didn't think he looked that bad, but obviously if I didn't support my wife, I'd be in trouble with her.
And that's probably something you had not thought of discussing, but maybe that is the kind of thing that parents discuss. You know, if he's not doing drugs and he's not in a gang, he just chooses to wear a hot pink top with a bright green pair of pants, then they're not going to lose a nerve over it.
Yeah.
You know, every nerve's over it.
Well, now, obviously, as a parent with teenagers, I have to have some unbreakable ground rules to make sure that I protect my child's safety and that, you know, hopefully guide him or her into a responsible and happy and productive adult life. What are some of the types of ground rules that you would suggest I lay down so that my wife and I, or spouse and I, lay down so that, you know, there are certain boundaries that you don't let your teenager go over?
There must be unbreakable rules, I assume, in every family. However, those would vary, I think, from family to family and would be based on several different things. One would be what kind of teenager you have.
Yeah.
Some children are more headstrong, some are more compliant. The second would be how tightly you want to run your household. Rules will vary from family to family. In the case of teenagers, you're probably better off establishing high and very clear expectations for them as opposed to what we call unbreakable rules.
Yeah.
And one good way to handle that might be to have some principles that you follow as a family, like refraining from the use of foul language, no matter how angry you get or what the circumstance is.
Yeah.
It's very difficult for one person in the family to do something different when everybody knows the rules and everybody else is following along.
Yeah, but Dad cusses all the time when he's mad.
Yeah, then they certainly will follow that or you know, repeat that behavior. With things like dating, you might want to reach that decision about an appropriate age for dating with that particular child based on maturity level. And then you want to discuss what happens on a date.
Yeah.
Two, you don't want them to get into all kinds of things because you approved they're going out on a date, so you need to set guidelines up there as well. You might talk about curfews. Again, that's something that would have to be negotiated.
Yeah,
you can't just set a curfew with the only stipulation being the time they come home. It's as bad as saying when you leave the house at 6 p.m., you can run with a gang and commit small crimes and do as many drugs as you want, just as long as you get home by midnight. That is not a recipe for success at all.
That's true. I like that fact of negotiating because obviously in certain circumstances, like if a child is going to a show down or a rock concert or something downtown that lasts till midnight, you're not going to expect them in at 11:30, but you know, if they're just hanging out with you, don't know where with what.
Exactly. And there's just more buy-in if they're part of the negotiation.
Yeah, I think another key ground rule that most every family should have, and we were never very good at this when our kids were teens, is a family meal every night when all four of us or all six of us or however many children you have are there. Because I think that, you know, that's pretty set ground rules that we're going to spend a little bit of time together as a family makes a lot of sense.
That is a great one, and I had that as a child growing up. But I know it's a different time now. Now I'm in my middle years myself, so that's a long, long time ago. But we did have that, sitting down together for an evening meal.
You know,
and children
what,
don't
what,
have a lot of that now.
What really bugs me is that I'd also want as a ground rule no smartphones, video games, iPads, or laptops at the table. My wife and I were at a restaurant a few weeks ago, and I think there was a family with like three children there, and each one of them had their own little iPad or whatever it was.
See, that could be a no-no.
I didn't hear one conversation between the adults and the children while they sat there busy texting or playing video games or whatever, and I thought, boy, is that awful.
Would have to be a ground rule for my family if I were doing that. And speaking of laptops and iPhones and smartphones, one good rule for parents to set or lay down is not taking that iPhone to bed. The family computer might be turned off all the night, but the kids are taking their iPhones to bed, and they're connected all night. They're watching, you know, they're on the web into the wee hours of the morning. They're texting their friends back and forth.
Yeah.
And they're up. They're up. They're not asleep. They come to school the next day, and they're sleepy, and they're distracted, and they're unable to maximize their learning time, and they don't do well. So that might be one rule. It works in school. Maybe they should turn their iPhones into their parents at bedtime.
Yeah,
because once they go to their rooms and lock their doors, you don't know what they're doing in there.
That sounds like a very good idea, an iPhone check-in.
Absolutely. It works in school like a charm. The kids come in with their phones, and they hand them over to the teacher first thing in the morning.
Yeah,
and, you know, parents have argued. Parents have said, oh, what if my child has an emergency? Well, if your child has a true emergency, they're not really able to call you. That's going to be done by the teacher or the nurse or the principal or someone.
You know, we got along without iPhones when emergencies happened.
We certainly did. We certainly did.
I think we can still get along with that.
And we do quite well. We do quite well.
Yeah. How about the requirement to meet new friends? I know that's a tough one, but, you know, obviously if I had a daughter who was dating a fellow I didn't know anything about, I'd kind of like to know who that person was and to meet them. But on the other hand, obviously, my daughter might react violently if I said, you got to bring John over or whatever his name over.
Well, maybe if they see you entertaining your own friends at home, they won't think anything of having you meet their friends.
Yeah,
not all of them, but friends that, you know, they have a very close relationship with. And that's another good way for parents to find out what's going on with their children, because teenagers have that curious habit. They will talk with the parents of their friends more openly than they will speak with their own parents. So that's one good way of knowing what's going on in your child's life, too. Not like snooping, but just conversing casually with your child's best friend. You get to find out quite a bit about what they engage themselves with.
Well, here's a tough question. I'm going to tell you a funny story, but the question is how you should discipline your teen for stepping over the line and breaking your trust. And this is a funny story from years ago when our daughter was probably 16. She'd just gotten her driver's license, and we loaned her one of our family cars that night. She said she was going to spend the night at her girlfriend's house, or the evening at her girlfriend's house, but somehow we found out that she wasn't at her girlfriend's house. That she, the girlfriend said she'd actually was meeting with a fellow, and they were going to a theater out at the Southridge Mall, which was about 10 miles away from our house. And my wife and I jumped in the other family car, and we drove over there, drove around the parking lot of the mall, and found her car, our car parked there. So we waited near the entrance to the theater, just waiting to confront her. When she came out of the theater wondering who this boy was and what they were up to. And the funniest thing was we saw her come out with a fella, and the mother of the boy came up to him, and he left with his mother and went home in her car because he wasn't old enough to even drive yet. So obviously he was a totally innocent in terms of any kind of bad behavior. The problem was that our daughter had broken our trust by not telling us in advance what she was doing, which we would have had absolutely no problem with anyway. And all I remember doing is driving home with her and talking about lack of trust. But I don't know, should there have been greater consequences than that, or how would you have handled a situation like that?
Well, I would have had that conversation about a lack of trust, but I might also have laid down some grounding rules for some grounding consequences at that time, maybe for the next couple of times that she wants to go out with her girlfriends or anyone else.
Yeah.
She would not be allowed to go.
So
not
you
for
think
an
grounding is a pretty valid discipline tactic?
It works for kids. It works for teenagers because they get really upset when they cannot go out and be with their friends. They're afraid of losing their friends because they cannot be part of the activities and that kind of thing. You can't do it for a year or two. After a while, they forget what they're grounded for. But for the next couple of times, you might arrange for the next couple of times that you really want to go out with your girlfriend, you don't get to go.
Yeah,
or I get to do some chaperoning because you've betrayed my trust.
Huh. Well, this is such a crucial issue, and I know you deal with that in your book for girls. How do I build my teen self-esteem? There's so much of these, as you mentioned somewhere, that the cliques are even worse for the girls than the boys, but they've been going on for years because I remember my wife tells me that back in her high school days, it was a big 5 for girls and a big 8 for guys in the school,
yeah.
And all this kind of stuff. And it can be devastating, obviously, to teenagers if they're not included in one of these cliques. And how do you counsel a girl or a guy, for that matter, that it really doesn't need to ruin their whole life and make them self-conscious the rest of their lives that they're not included in one of these exclusive clubs.
Yeah, there are certain things that girls have to know. They have to know that they're good enough. They have to know that their self-worth is not determined by a boy's attention or by the attention of all their friends. But I think parents have a big part to play in that. I think they need to let their children know that they're good enough exactly as they are and that they're accepted. They can help their children to identify qualities of themselves that make them special. And so they build that confidence, and they build it over time. And girls, in the book Rockstar Teenage Girl, there's actually a place where girls can write down the things they love about themselves.
Yeah,
make a list of their successes, because every time they're successful or good at something, they build their own self-confidence. But parents can play a very vital part in establishing the confidence of teens. We tend to think that children only listen to their friends, but that's not the truth. A lot of teenagers have shared that their biggest role models have been adults in their lives and people who have been on their side and being an ally, that kind of thing.
I love the part when you say that, and this is so true, that you think that it's so important that you make a certain impression with somebody else, or that they think such and such about you, and that really the other person is probably thinking most about themselves.
Absolutely. Especially in their teenage years. They're very self-absorbed.
What kills me is our... my wife has a niece that has a 15-year-old daughter, and she's recently gone through a divorce, and said, money's tight right now, and the daughter comes around and says she's just got to have a $500 dress for the spring prom because all her girlfriends are getting one. And she can't wear the same dress she wore with her boyfriend the last time because she wore it to the last dance.
Imagine that. There's so much pressure on our girls to be beautiful and to live up to everyone else's expectations. I know they're reading a lot of girl magazines where they're looking at pictures of girls. They don't know that these pictures have been photoshopped or airbrushed or whatever they've gone through to look like that. And so they start striving for that body type. They want these outfits that these girls are wearing. And then they run into all kinds of other problems. And the question of body image and poor self-image, they start developing problems like eating disorders because they need to be a certain size. You know, a friend of mine has an 8-year-old who is already picking at things at the dinner table because she doesn't want to gain weight. The kid is
sick. That's so sad when, like I said before, it seems to get younger and younger that
they get younger and younger with the issue.
Mass media and social media, it's easy to see why. You have 8-year-olds texting all the time.
Yeah, why? Why on earth? What do they have to discuss after school via text that they can't talk about during recess on the playground?
The other problem is it's much less face-to-face communication anymore because everyone wants to text everything.
Comes back to parents. You don't give them that kind of phone at 8.
No.
They can't buy them themselves.
Yeah, that's true.
So parents are giving them to them or buying them for them.
Yeah, you indicate that the most powerful role model in a child's life is the same-sex parent. And I know from my wife's standpoint with our daughter, it's probably the most difficult also. But what steps can a mother take to effectively guide her daughter without being intrusive? I think you sort of hit on it earlier when you said, you know, strike up conversations and maintain them regularly. And
Yes, and they can make dates with their daughters to have girl time together, quality time together. And in that book, there's a letter to parents right at the front of it where I do urge parents, or mothers in that case especially, to read the book and have some conversation about the book when they have quality time together. Because that's an easier way. If children think they're discussing things in general, they tend to share a lot more than if
that's true.
Specifically ask them, oh, what about your boyfriend? What is he doing these days? Who is he? You know, that kind of thing. But they will share what they perceive to be a general kind of opinion much more easily.
No, that's a great idea, that make it general rather than hone in on what were you doing with your boyfriend last night.
Because once they relax, they share. They get open once they relax and once they are able to trust you.
Yeah, that's true.
And to feel not criticized or judged by you, because they're really big on being accepted for who they are as individuals at that age. Don't tell them who you think they should be like. They truly hate that.
Yeah.
You know, they
sure.
want to be themselves, and they want to be accepted
and
the way
they
are.
And don't tell them you should be like me when I was your age.
No, that's a deal breaker. That is an absolute deal breaker.
Well, how best can a single mom with sons compensate for lack of a father, or a single dad with daughters compensate for a lack of a mother? I know, obviously, they should try to get some guidance from somebody of the same sex, but what's the best tactic to, you're in a home and you don't have a mother or father present?
I think you look around in your family circle for a same-sex adult who can be a really good role model.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be the biological parent necessarily.
Yeah.
It could be an uncle, it could be a cousin, a godparent, somebody who would take the interest of that child and who would act like a parent. It's that whole thing of it takes a village. It doesn't have to be the biological parent. Any trustworthy adult in the life of that child can be a role model.
Yeah,
there's some research done where it shows that kids just have more successful adult lives if they've had a role model growing up.
Yeah. And another difficult issue, obviously, with more and more these days is divorce. And what's the best way for divorced parents to share the responsibility so that one child or one parent doesn't get played off against the other one? And
and that happens, and each parent feels the need to overcompensate kind of, for not being there physically with the child.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that the parents would need to talk about and get on the same page about. How are they going to parent this child in two separate households, virtually, because maybe one has them during the week and one has them on weekends, and you don't want different sets of rules, in effect, when the kids change places or change houses.
The sad thing is when the parents are so bitter towards each other that they can't get together and work out common ground rules for the best interests of their child. And that's why I so much encourage in my book that if you're going to divorce your spouse, that you do so on a win-win situation. You don't
absolutely
try to show up the other parent, and you put the children first. But that's easier said than done, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, but it is an adult issue more so, and they have to figure out how they're going to do this for the benefit of their children. The children are not supposed to figure out, how is mom going to raise me and how is dad going to raise me so I come out okay.
No, that's for sure.
It really is the responsibility of the adult.
And they certainly don't want to feel like they're responsible for the breakup either.
No, they don't. They don't. And they tend to do that. They tend to take these things onto themselves. So each parent would have to explain, this is not because of you. And let them know that, they're guiltless in this. That, it's not working out between myself and your mom or your dad and myself or whatever the story is. But we do love you as parents, and we will do everything for you that we can, et cetera.
I think it's fascinating in your book you say it's not too early to introduce teenagers to the idea of their own spirituality. And you have a whole part of your book related to that. Tell us a little bit about what you mean by spirituality and how you introduce that to the teenagers.
Well, we can use the basic principles or the simpler principles in that realm, because first we don't want to confuse spirituality with religion. They're two very separate things. And in the book, I chose the very simplest examples because that's a difficult concept even for adults. So for children, I used or explained things like happiness is a birthright and that happiness is available to everyone once they choose it.
Yeah.
That it does not come from outside of ourselves
or
a situation or another person. It comes from ourselves, and we have to choose it. Happiness depends upon ourselves, is what Aristotle said. And I've watched that work on the Dr. Phil show, where you have two people arguing away and no one's giving in, et cetera, et cetera. And then he finally says to them, do you want to be happy or do you want to be right?
Yeah.
And you can see them pause. You see them pause for a second and decide to be happy, and it's a decision.
Yeah.
And then they can move on from there. So if we can get that into our teens early, especially our girls, girls beat themselves up more than boys do about everything. So if they can know from the beginning that this is my choice, I am choosing to do this, then they can have a happy, successful life.
Yeah, well,
for the most part.
Like I said before, I definitely think that a rock star teenage girl would be an excellent gift for a parent to give to their daughter. Obviously, it's written for girls, so I wouldn't say you probably shouldn't give it to your son. But tell our listeners how they can get your book or what's the best way to obtain that.
Well, the book is on Amazon.com at this point, and if you have worldwide listeners, you're in internet radio, they probably are hearing you. It's also available on Amazon UK.
Oh, that's good.
Yes, yeah, so they can purchase the book there. The boy's book will be coming, but that's later, co-authored with a man, of course.
Oh, that's good. So
yes, so that's where they can find the book at this point.
Yeah, well, I would highly recommend. I previewed the book on Amazon just from the little bit that they put up there on the website. That would definitely be something that you could give to your teenage daughter, and then you could discuss it, like you said, and get into how they're thinking. And it's such an excellent presentation of be your own person rather than conform to what vibe or whatever clique is called in your school.
Yes, and the big purpose of the book too was to give girls way of setting up a blueprint for their own lives, but also to bring their issues into clear focus so that parents can begin to assist them, and educators and mentors and every adult in their life can actually lend a helping hand as these children grow into womanhood. It's a difficult period of their life.
And if it encourages them to share with a role model, with a parent or other role model, what their challenges and problems are, it's such a wonderful benefit for them.
Yes, and they like having that. They like having that help from an adult, contrary to popular belief. They do want help from adults.
They might not be comfortable
asking for it, and they might not seem accepting right away, but they do want that relationship.
That's true. They want the relationship, but they hate to ask for it. And certainly appreciate you taking time with us today, and once again, I would recommend that book. It's called Teenage Rockstar, and it's on Amazon.com.
Rockstar Teenage Girl.
Oh, Rockstar Teenage Girl. Sorry.
It's okay.
And what's the subtitle on that again?
Self and Confidence Building for Tween and Teenage Girl.
Yeah, that is such a crucial subject. And thank you so much for joining us, Nordica. And best.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Roy.
Selling your book.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Bye. Well, as we continue on the topic of midlife relationships and how to improve them, this segment is for you fathers out there. Mothers, you're welcome to listen in, but it's really about us fathers. Since this program is about middle age, we'll speak to you primarily as fathers of preteens and teens, as well as fathers of young adults. As we all know, being a father of a teenager is not always easy. Also, as our children leave home and go off on their own, I'm certain most of us want to maintain a cordial and helpful relationship with adult sons and daughters. And I want to introduce a resource to help us become better fathers whatever the age of our children. It's called the Great Dads Project, and it's my privilege to introduce the founder, Keith Zafran, or Zafran, excuse me, I mispronounced your name. And Keith is also author of the soon-to-be-released book, How to Be a Great Dad, No Matter What Kind of Father You Had. And I guess that's going to be out around May 1st, Keith?
That's right. It should be ready by May 1st.
Well, hello and welcome to our program. And tell us what this Great Dads Project is. What inspired you to found it, and what is your primary mission?
Oh, thank you, Roy. It's a pleasure to be with you and your listeners. It's really a culmination of a life and a life work. It comes from my own painful relationship with my dad that took me years to get through and recover from. I talk about myself as for many years being a wounded son, and then at 37 years old, you know, a little bit later in life, becoming a bewildered new father. I had no idea what to do because I really had no model for what fathering was. And then years of study and working with other men, learning from great father mentors. And then really the turning point, I think, in my own life was this profound privilege I had for 6 years working with incarcerated men, men in prison, and teaching them how to heal what we might call the father wound, because so many of them, like me, you know, had very painful relationships with their fathers.
Well, that's the ultimate separation when the father's in prison, obviously. He's separated more than anything else. But so many of us are in our own little prisons, whether we're present at home or not.
That's a great way to express it, Roy, kind of a prison of our own making. But it was in prison for 6 years working with these men that I learned how powerful an experience it is to help another man heal his father wound and then to teach him how to reach out to his own children. So many of them whom they had abandoned or had very distant relationships with. And it was as a result of those 6 years that I realized, because I not only got to work with the incarcerated men, but all of these volunteer executives who would fly in from around the country to work with these men. The program was called the Prison Entrepreneurship Program.
Ooh.
We were teaching these men how to develop business plans, business concepts, and start their own businesses after they were released so they don't end up back in prison.
Yeah, and
I bet some of those
executives probably didn't have much better relationship with their children than some of the prisoners did. I know
how
executives get wrapped up in their careers.
Well, you are right on there, and that's really the answer to your question, what led me to start the Great Dads Project, because I realized that what I was doing with the incarcerated men is a global and universal issue. You know, very few of us were fortunate to have great dads. And most of us want to be better dads than the dads that we had.
Yeah, that's very true.
So that's the answer to your question. I mean, that's what the Great Dads Project is about. That's my mission. I'm trying to help men heal whatever wound might exist from relationship with their dad and then become the dad to their own children they wish they had had.
Well, say I'm a father who is very close to my son or daughter, or sons and daughters, if I have more than one, when they were little toddlers or even, you know, little league days and all those. But now they're teenagers and they don't want to have anything to do with me, and they brush me off whenever I try to ask about what they're up to or who they're going out with or whatever. And,
and I certainly
want to make sure that they're maintaining their moral standards and not getting in trouble, and certainly not going down the wrong path. But what do I do to reestablish myself as a good father in that kind
of situation? It's a great question. It's a huge shift. You know, really, parenting has to take a massive shift in style or technique or strategy around those preteen years. And I know I'm going through it. I've got one preteen right now. My youngest is 11, and I've got two teenagers.
Yeah.
I've got a 13 and a 15-year-old. So I'm right in the midst of that, you know, realizing. It can be. I'm finding it actually to be a delight, because I had the good fortune of years ago working for 10 years with high school students. So I got a little bit of jump on the situation, and I realized, oh, my goodness, these parents are making such massive mistakes because they're still trying to parent their teenagers as if they were young children.
Yeah,
they're still trying.
the biggest mistake most people make is not to...
You can't exert that kind of control. You're not in charge anymore. You think you are, and you've been in charge for 10 years, so it seems like things should continue. But that kind of control, or that kind of what the teens experience is crowding in or pressure, it just doesn't work. And the parents, it's a difficult transition to get, especially dads, I think, to back off and to give tons of love and acceptance. And here, let me just say real quickly, Roy, I teach dads three essential fathering skills that I call affirmation, acceptance, and affection.
Oh, that's great.
Three A's. I call them the three A's of great fathering. Yeah. Affirmation, you know, giving praise to our kids.
Yeah.
Full acceptance.
Instead of just criticizing all the time, like I'm.
Oh my goodness! Yeah. And then giving them affection, physical and spoken. But you know, we only have time to talk about this one. And here's where I think most dads break down in the preteen and teenage years, is that those kids require tons of acceptance because.
Yeah.
Teenagers are looking for a place to belong.
What a good point, yes.
And if they don't feel like they belong in their family, if they don't feel accepted in their family, they're going to go anywhere they can to get that sense of belonging. And here's the distinction that I think most dads miss. When we don't approve of something, and there are many things to disapprove of in the teenage years, I understand.
Yeah.
You know, the way our kids listen to their music, the kind of music they listen to, the way they wear their clothes, their hair, their choice
of
friends.
Oh,
my goodness. Their choice of entertainment and websites. I mean, there's so much to disapprove of. But I think many dads make this fatal error. In disapproving of some behavior or choice, they end up rejecting the child.
Yeah, that's true. Or the child gets the feeling that they're being rejected. And that,
exactly.
Their father's not there as someone that they can turn to for advice when they want. And I think a lot of sons and daughters are crying out for advice, both from the father and the mother, and they don't feel like they're getting it.
Exactly. And so what I try to teach dads is how to express unconditional and unending acceptance, even if you disapprove of something your son or daughter is doing.
Yeah, I think it's
huge.
It's also all right to have a few ground rules set up that you don't bend, like insisting that son or daughter be there for dinner every night or whatever, you know.
Absolutely.
Some ground rules that, and I think that's what most children want. I know even our pet dog likes some ground rules.
Not to
say children or dogs, but, you know, I think...
Yeah.
Teenagers and whatever age, they like to be told, you know, that there are certain things that I expect, but you have a lot of freedom to explore your pending adulthood and find out who you want to be and who you are, so long as you stick with a few ground rules.
Well, you sound like a great dad, Roy.
I wish I had my kids. One unfortunately is no longer alive, and the other one's way down in Texas, so we don't see much of them. No, we had a naval pilot.
That.
The daughter was a naval pilot, and she was killed in 2007. But I wish I could do some things over. But on the other hand, my kids turned out all right. So, tell people how they can access your website and some of the services you offer there. And because I think a lot of people would like to learn about this Great Dads Project.
Thanks, Roy. Well, one of the services I offer is I actually work one-on-one with dads. I'm a personal great dad coach, and it's one of my favorite things that I do. I've done it for years, worked with hundreds of guys, and if any of your listeners are interested in finding out more about great dad coaching, what that's like, they can contact me directly through the website. The website is www.thegreatdadsproject.org. Project. Dads is plural. TheGreatDadsProject.org.
Yeah.
Or directly, you can email me at Keith, K-E-I-T-H, at TheGreatDadsProject.org.
And tell us about this book you have coming out around the first.
How to Be a Great Dad, No Matter What Kind of Father You Had. So many of the guys that I have worked with over the years feel somewhat limited by perhaps not having the kind of dad that they wish they had had. maybe like me, they don't have a model, or even guys who had a great dad. The world has changed so dramatically since we were being raised that even guys who have a great model for fathering are still sometimes a little bit lost trying to figure out how do we father today in this technological world.
Yeah.
And so no matter what kind of father a man had, I've written the book to say no matter what kind of dad, whether you had a great dad or much worse.
A not so great dad.
Yeah. I can teach you how to heal that father wound and these three core essential fathering practices that will create great relationships with your kids.
And it's so the important book is, that you heal the wounds of the past, because there's nothing more destructive than to go around bemoaning something that happened with your own father, your own whoever,
exactly.
30, 20 years ago or whatever.
Exactly, yeah. And so the book, it should be on Amazon by May 1st. You can also go to my website, thegreatdadsproject.org, and you can actually download the introduction and the first chapter just to see if you like it. And
oh,
if you
great.
Do that, you know, I'll have your email address, and when the book does come out, I can just email you directly and say, hey, it's ready. You can go get it if you'd like.
I would highly recommend that, because it sounds like you have a very unique resource out there speaking specifically to the dads of the world. And like you say, there is kind of a fatherhood crisis in this country. And
oh, boy.
Any advice that can be offered to help us be better dads, especially as our children mature and, you know, they need us so much, and but they don't need the dad of a five-year-old when they're 15 or 18.
Yeah, and it actually works against you. And it's hard. I understand it's a very hard transition. As I said, I'm kind of in the last few years in the midst of that myself, and it's wonderful. You know, when you can make that transition, I think I have a better relationship with my 15-year-old son right now than I think I ever have. And
that's to be admired.
It's remarkable. Well, this weekend, I took my three boys out for dinner, and I told them about, you know, the book being almost published. They're so excited. I told them about what endorsements for a book are, and they said, oh, that's really cool, Dad. And then I said, hey, would you guys be open to writing an endorsement for me?
That's a
and
great
they were
idea.
So they were so excited, and I couldn't believe my 15-year-old son. Well, check this out, 15.
Yeah.
He wrote. He said something about, you know, my dad takes us on one-on-one time on our birthdays, and he spends as much time with us as he can. And then he said, I love when my dad tucks us in at night, and I just like being with him.
That's wonderful.
I couldn't believe it. I just like being with him. And I thought, that's it. See, that's what every dad of a teenager hopes for.
Yeah. That sounds like a wonderful resource. And I would recommend everyone go to that www.thegreatdadsproject.org. And that's dads plural, because I tried to go there and didn't put the S in and didn't get there
right away.
And said, thank you so much for joining us, and best of luck on your upcoming book. I'm sure it'll be a great resource for the fathers of America.
Thank you so much, Roy. I appreciate you, too, and the work you're doing.
Thank you, and bye.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.